All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm still Robert Winters, and this is still Cambridge Inside Out, and I'm still accompanied by that other guy.
Patrick Barrett.
There we go, the man with his proper good product placement on his head there.
Come on down and visit us.
By the way, I have to say that, you know, it had been my desire for a long time to actually sip a beverage with you at the rooftop of 907 Main. And it was wicked ass hot when we were up there, like a griddle. It wasn't the best day to be standing out there in the sun, but I'm very glad we did.
It's well earned and well deserved, I believe.
Yeah. So one of the things that I think we should at least mention here, because it is now June of an odd number year, and that is the fact that this is a municipal election year, and I don't think we want to, there's actually not a lot to say, but there are a few key things that should be said. One is that, well, let's first just talk about the calendar. You know, so for people who may have an interest in running for city council or school committee, the first day of availability of nomination papers is Monday, July 3rd. So that's only like 4 weeks away. Or less than 4 weeks away. So if you're thinking about it, you better get out of the closet and start letting people know that you're really thinking of running. You know, this playing this guessing game isn't really so helpful. And so far, we have one candidate who has decided to not seek re-election, namely Alana Mallon. There are rumors of other people, for example, you know, and we'll see what actually happens. I mean, I've heard rumors many times over that they often don't work out to be true.
You got to be careful with rumors about city councilors, because oftentimes I've discovered that city councilors themselves make rumors about themselves and pass them around quite a bit. So I think, you know, whether people are thinking Carlone's going to drop out, or maybe they think that Quinton's going to go someplace else. My guess is the origin of that information is the actual candidate themselves. So I wouldn't get too excited.
Right. So I don't think people should, you know, but there is at least one. Well, we always like to say in an at-large election, all seats are open, right?
That's right.
Okay. So everybody's up for re-election if they choose to seek it. But there will be certainly one new face no matter what, and possibly more. One of the observations I've made, and I think I can back it up pretty solidly over the years, is that if there's a vacancy, then there's a greater chance of there being more than one replacement. If there are two vacancies, there's a very good chance you'll see three new faces. So anyway, that's just the nature of PR elections when there's a lot more votes, you know, ballots in play. That tends to happen.
It is kind of interesting that there are not too many people who have thrown their hat in the ring yet. And the only names that come to mind, and I know on the school committee side, a woman by the name of Eugenia Schra has been pretty vocal about her intent to run. I know her. I really, really like her. She's a parent, which is like already like a huge bonus for me. But I think her platform, I haven't gone through too much of it. I think it was in response to the removal of algebra from eighth grade, which has struck.
Well, I'll get on board with that. You know, yeah. The thing is, you know, school committee is often the sort of the forgotten stepchild of Cambridge elections, which is unfortunate because it's really important. I think, well, the schools are important. How important the school committee is an open question. But I don't want to be unfair because I don't follow them as closely as perhaps I could or should. But, you know, I teach mathematics. I want students to learn mathematics. I want them to get jazzed about science and mathematics and go on and do interesting things and, you know, or get jobs, just get good jobs, even in the trades, you know. And when I listen to school committee members just, you know, talking up and down about every possible social justice issue about 90% of the time, and then, you know, I said, where's the math? And then I hear word that, oh, they've decided to start, easing off any of the math requirements, you know. And I thought, guys, what are you doing?
In the name of equity and social justice. And to my mind, just like the declarations of emergencies, just like the, all the other things that our politicians do to do anything they want to do, using something like a social justice and equity to justify lowering the bar so that we're to create an effective raising the bar is pretty gross negligence.
To me, the single greatest thing that you can do if you're interested in social justice is to get a really excellent education for the children so that they can go on and they can either go to college at following more of an academic trail, or they can be jazzed about going into something, more that's, more in the trades or whatever. But if you want to lift people from poverty, if you want to sort of equalize people to whatever degree is feasible, that's how you do it. You don't just talk about saying the right words. You just lift people up. It's that simple.
And I think that's where Cambridge loses way a lot of the times, is we always sort of throw money at our problems and not people. And in this situation, it is simply a matter of will and simply a matter of, this is where the school committee really comes into play. And as a parent dealing with the school committee all throughout the pandemic, they're our only real voice when it comes to the administration and the teachers union. So without a strong school committee as an advocate for the parents have no voice at all. And I think as a parent who used to have kids in the system, that's exactly how we felt. We felt completely powerless and without an advocate. And I think, I don't want to sort of discredit the school committee or the mayor who's the head of the school committee, but we look to them to be our leaders and to be our voice. And when they're not doing that, it really is a sensation that there is no ground underneath you. So I love Eugenia's energy. I love that she's a parent. And I think that is absolutely crucial to maintaining some parent involvement in our school system, which to me, isn't the expression it takes a village? So to me, that's where the village comes into play.
I speaking of candidates, Christopher Lim was a good candidate. Oh, yeah. He ran a couple of times. I hope he still considers the seeking it. I know it can get disheartening if you run a couple of times and you don't get elected. But when there are vacancies, especially don't give up. Still a shot.
I think the people who run are incredibly brave, and I think that it takes a lot of guts to get up there and put yourself on a line to be loved or rejected by the city of Cambridge. I think it's even more so when you speak your mind. I think if you're the kind of person who goes up to City Hall every Monday night, and I'm guilty of this myself, just to shout out the council for 2 minutes and then walk home, you're not really doing it. Those people who step up and give it a shot, if you lose, you win, you still, in my mind, you win. You gave it, you actually put yourself out there.
One of the, because people talk to me about this every single day, right? And I
you're think- You're the Wizard of Oz.
Maybe so. I think there's a bit sort of a misunderstanding about what an elected official in a city like Cambridge really is. People think of this as a career. I don't think you should think of it as a career. I think you should look at it as a period of service that you do. You put in your years, just like if you got drafted, you had to go overseas and do your job, right? One of the things that I've been saying, and I mean this with all sincerity, is that what I would really love to see happen is a whole range of people stepping forward fearlessly, not worrying about just necessarily winning or losing, but saying, I'm putting myself out and I'm going to be available, right? Mm-hmm. And like a team, all for one and one for all, because the thing is voters need options, they need choices, they need a little encouragement too, mm-hmm. And they also need a lot of education. And the thing is that if all you get is the same old, saying the same old stuff over and over and over again without any alternative points of view, I don't think that's healthy.
So to
anybody who's out there thinking about it, get that hat, throw it in the ring, And if we have 40 people running, I know the election commission will go crazy if I say that, because there's only so many names you can fit on a ballot, right? But still, I think the more the merrier. And
I agree.
And let's have a real serious conversation. And by the way, you know, with discussions about the city charter and possible alterations or not to that, I think that there are some important discussions that should be taking place. And we need candidates and other people out there to sort of be participants in that conversation.
And not for nothing, Robert, like I've never been labeled a progressive liberal. So I feel like a little bit politically unhoused in Cambridge and very much unrepresented. So I remember when I first looked at the city council roster after I met Tim Toomey 800 years ago, I looked at all the council candidates and I was like, they're all the same. How do you just pick, why don't we just throw a dart? Yeah. Which other than voting for Timmy that year, I did throw a dart. I didn't know who I was voting. I didn't know any. They all agree to the same stuff.
You know, one of the, at the risk of repeating myself, because I know it's something I think about a lot and I've probably said already in the past, but I'll say this is, you know, for a while I used to wonder about what's the definition of the word progressive, you know, and it's kind of shifted over the years, but I finally sort of settled on at least an understanding for me. So somebody says, well, what's your politics, Robert? I would say I'm a small D Democrat. And, you know, believe in democracy, believe in actually asking people and getting your clues from the people who are actually the citizens of your state, city, or country, whatever, and representing them. Whereas a progressive, quite honestly, and I'll say this very critically, a progressive is somebody who says, I have all the answers. I know what's best. I'm going to push something through, whether you like it or not. And one day you'll come to respect me for it. And well, so in that regard, I have to say, I'm not a progressive. If that's the definition of progressive, I'm not one.
I would take it a step further. And I think the new progressivism says, not only do I not have all the answers, but all my answers are on a moral high ground above whatever answer you can come up with. And if you don't agree with me, I have a whole bunch of isms and ists I can label you with.
Right.
And that, to my mind, is like the death of conversation.
I know. And that disease has actually permeated local, state, and national politics in this country for too long.
Well, what bothers me, and I like that you said at the very beginning about like what the role of a city councilor is in Cambridge, because I think a lot of our council, especially right now, imagine themselves to be state legislators. They imagine themselves to be on sort of the national stage. So a lot of the rhetoric and nonsense that we hear at City Hall is almost like a local community theater representing of the national argument, where it has no place whatsoever in the Sullivan Chamber. And, you know, where the most conservative guy on the city council is the former head of a teachers union. Like, right. Like, you know, right. It's not exactly like we have a vast range of thoughts and opinions on any council that we've had.
Right. So, but if I were to sort of divide, and I hesitate to do this, but if I were to start dividing city councilors and school committee members into camps, is basically those that basically listen to the citizenry and try to represent the whole breadth of the citizenry. And then those who arrive with predetermined answers. And I will take the former, and thank you very much, not the latter.
Speaking of predetermined answers, the council did something Monday night and passed to a second reading a heap of flaming garbage that I call buto.
And let's just be clear. I mean, I wrote something about this on Monday. It's Building Energy Use Disclosure Ordinance, but the amendment makes it that name completely irrelevant. True. Because it's not about building energy use disclosure anymore. It's about building energy retrofits at potentially significant costs and disruption, the building which may or may not be a good thing. Right. Yeah. So anyway,
In a remarkable and predictable twist to contradict myself, the Community Development Department, which, as I have stated earlier, is an activist organization and nothing more, has decided to spend the past 6.5 weeks to come up with zoning language to help, or municipal language to help define what BUDO is going to actually do. There were lots of changes to the language, subtle changes from what was passed from the ordinance committee to CDD. And the council sort of blindly passed to a second reading with the promise from Quentin Zondervan and Burhan Azim that there might be amendments that they will add at the 0 hour upon ordination. As a business community member, as a resident, and somebody who has buildings that will be affected by Budo, I've been at the table for a long time on this, alerting condo owners, you're welcome, you're now off the hook. But everyone else will listen to me about how terrible this ordinance actually is, as New York with their Article 97 is discovering, and as Boston is now discovering with Birdo. However, we were promised that we would be brought to the table to discuss the zoning language. I keep calling it zoning language, but it's municipal language. We were not, but we were invited to a meeting June 8th to discuss our concerns. Now, Robert, I had a question for you. Do you see an issue with an ordinance that's already been passed to a second reading and then inviting people to discuss that very ordinance and the concerns they may have with it as it's about to be passed and ordained?
It's a very, very progressive way to proceed, isn't it? Meaning we have arrived with conclusions it's like they say sometimes about some of the road reconfigurations where they invite the public to a meeting where really the only thing up for debate is what color are the flex posts. Again, I'm not saying that to sort of get down on bicycle infrastructure, pro or con.
Ooh, be careful, be careful.
Right. It is, it's become a real flashpoint and people are going to mischaracterize anything you're going to say, regardless of what you're going to say,
But, I heard Robert Winters hates bikes.
Well, actually, I'll say this is a rabbit hole we don't want to go down exactly. But, I was recently driving, mm-hmm. going to Market Basket to go shopping. And I saw how many bicyclists were riding on Hampshire Street heading towards Somerville at rush hour. And I said, okay, you want to make a case for separated bicycle infrastructure on a case-by-case basis? I said, okay, I've looked at that. And I said, I think maybe I could be very easily convinced that that's a good thing there, right? Because you actually see the usage, the utilization, it's not theoretical. It's not somebody trying to inflict an ideology on it. But then I come across where I live on Broadway, and I said, I've never seen a tenth of that number of people on my street. I said, but the fact that they're going to reconfigure Broadway a year or so from now is completely non-negotiable.
Unfortunately, in a very classic Cambridge example, the bicycle safety ordinance that was passed 2015, amended 2020, if you tweaked a little bit of the language and allowed for some more flexibility implementation, you'd solve 90% of the infighting on this issue.
I agree completely.
But the
bicycle safety group during the political season asks people to sign pledges saying, No matter what anybody suggests, do not allow any amendments whatsoever.
The only other person that I know that would have people go around having people sign political pledges is Grover Norquist. So I kind of shy away from things like that. But
my feeling is it's good to be committed to good things. I'm not down on being, thoughtful.
I reject the premise that if you want to talk about it, that you're somehow pro car murder. Like that is not, it's not a binary argument, no matter which way you want to slice it. But, going back to Budo, nice try and distract me, Mr. Winters. We're now going to go to a meeting, which only the commercial people were invited to this meeting, by the way. No residential people were invited. So if you own a large residential building with apartments, sorry, we don't care about you, is the message. I'm supposed to go there on the 8th, which I will, and talk to the activists and say, you still haven't provided me a way to comply. I have no idea how this review board is supposed to work. I don't know how it's going to be populated or who actually gets the final say, because I think the council has some word in there too. But you promised us technical support, which you have not provided us, nor have you put any provisions to provide. And you have not provided any financial assistance, which you also promised us and have put no provisions to provide. Alana Mallon had also put in an amendment to exempt commercial condos, which was also removed by CDD, the activist organization. Right. And to my mind, you passed this thing, and it's going to be lawsuit city. And I hate to be driving that bus, but I'm afraid I might be.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for most Cambridge residents and their intelligence. And I think that, you know, just like when somebody, when the Mass Save offered me the opportunity to have insulation blown into my walls at cheap or free, I said, I'm there, do it, let's do it. And I'm thrilled that we did it. I made a good decision because people made, gave me a good incentive to do it. You know, if people want to have much more energy efficient buildings, they should be out there convincing people that this is good. Or maybe people are already convinced it's good. And then you're simply be free, helping them provide the means to do it in a way that fits their budgets.
You just pointed out a huge, huge gap in the logic of Budo. If we're requiring people to go all electric and burn our, you know, still 80%, burn on a 80% fossil fuel grid, we're actually be burning more greenhouse gases upstream than we do now. Second, if I'm doing that to an older building that hasn't done the insulation improvements that you're talking about, we're burning even more heat and more electricity in those buildings than we were 2 minutes ago for no good reason. So to my mind, you know, it's another example of the council and sort of the national conversation where we use an emergency to justify any action we want. We now have, you know, people coming up to the council saying, if we don't do this, climate change will, you know, ravage us all. Somehow 6 square miles is going to affect 10,000 square miles of the state, or, you know, the entire, you know, United States, which is, you know, 13 to 15% of the total greenhouse gas emissions for the world. And that Cambridge is going to somehow be a catalyst for that. Other towns are going to look at the disaster that we create with this and say, oh my God, thank goodness we didn't do that.
I feel some obligation to then say, but still, if you want to put solar panels on your building, do it. If you can make it, if you want to insulate your building, do it. When the next time your boiler is ready to go out and you can find a good deal on much more energy efficient ones, or if you want to switch from gas to electric, or if you want to even swap out your gas stove and put an induction stove, whatever, research it and do it. You can do that now. Nothing preventing you from doing that.
You'll be surprised to know, Robert, that I have solar panels in my house.
I am not surprised, and I know you do.
You want to know why? Because I hate EverSource.
And it's cheap. Yeah. I mean, here's something, you know, explaining to people that, in fact, you can save money in the long term by doing certain things. That's a pretty good argument for most people.
So the Quentin Zondervan argument is that the savings that we'll get 40 years from now will make up for all this, you know, and most of us will no longer be here, myself included. My solar panels I put on my house, I built my house and I put the solar panels while I was building it. I got a pretty good deal on the panels themselves. I'd say in year 7, which is I'm going into now, it's just about break even in terms of cost savings and the SRECs that I put back into it. But I tell you right now, when I get my $500 check from my SREC that I sold to the grid, I feel like an energy baron. And I also feel like I'm sticking it to EverSource because I absolutely hate them. The only two companies in the world I actually actively hate, EverSource and Comcast. But in that order. Although ironically, EverSource Gas is a great company. Really responsive. Yeah. But we're not supposed to.
Actually, a lot of the EverSource Gas people are the ones that went to the rescue when there was that disaster in Merrimack.
Yeah.
The Valley, right?
I've only had good things to say about them, and unfortunately, I'm sorry for the odds that they're going to go through. But you know, EverSource Electric, the worst, just the worst.
All right, there's one other topic I thought I might ask you, only because I don't know enough about it, quite honestly. But you know, we seem to have, over the last few years, we have this new pattern, which is sort of the one-off citizen petition where somebody says, I've got all the answers about how to reconfigure the city, whether it's the missing middle or, there's always the AHO stuff, which, you know, I've never been a fan of that whole way of looking at the world. But there's another one right now called the Franklin petition, which to me is, it's like, wait, isn't that a little bit like that missing middle thing that they were doing where they just were kind of, you know, they were really just going to double and triple residential densities and merge all the zones, like all the RISC zones into one and all the RISC, or maybe just make one residential zone for the whole city and then sell it as somehow, well, this is, we're just doing this to restore something. And I thought, what? What is this about? You know. Anyway, do you know anything about this one?
What you're talking about is the Franklin petition, which is a pretty wide sweeping citywide petition dealing with Res A, Res B, and C zoning. In fact, it erases C1 zoning, which is their multifamily zoning, and sort of bundles it into C zoning, which is used to be a lower density, but this version changes that significantly. In terms of what it does, it's an attempt to bump up residential FARs to allow for multifamily uses and otherwise single family areas, and then to sort of consolidate C zoning, which is, I think, arguably some of the worst zoning we have in the city, simply because it requires the utilization of equations to determine setbacks and in some cases height in otherwise uniform districts. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to tether it to land sizes, especially when you consider like every parcel in Cambridge is a little tiny unique snowflake. None is quite the same.
That's kind of right. You know, the way I look at a lot of these things, I like to bring it right down to personal terms. So I look at, you know, whether it was the missing middle or now it's this the Franklin thing or whatever. I look at it and I say to myself, okay, I own a 3-family house, don't have much land around it. I have minimal setbacks to the neighbor properties. Honestly, I would say my building is just a little overbuilt for the lot that it's on, right? My FAR shows up, I think, at about 1.1 something, maybe 1.2 something. All of these petitions, whether they're missing middle or Franklin petition, are dramatically higher densities than my building, which I think is actually a little, for the context,
so I've noticed
overshot, you know.
The FARs, I mean, I'm in a BA3 where my home is, and I noticed they bumped up my FAR from a 0.75 to a 1.49, which is a strange number.
They're doubling it.
Yeah, thank you for the bump. I can't use it at all, but I think that there's...
We're just, by the way, Patrick, we got to wrap it up. We're just about done here. Okay.
So in short, it's actually hot garbage. They shouldn't vote for it. And
I agree.
We should really stop doing this citywide petition.
All right. Anyway, we'll be back again soon enough on Cambridge Inside Out. Thanks.